Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business, where myself and Neil Stratton break down everything that's going on outside the game and outside the lines of the game of football and inside the business world, which is a multi-billion dollar, multifaceted industry. And we're always excited to talk about it and talk about different things. And Neil, how's it going this morning?
Going great, man. Just trying to sort through, still kind of cut up and evaluate and sort through all the draft and all that information. And there's all kind of scouting changes taking place right now. This is the time of the year for that, and starting to kind of take a look at 2017 as well. So even though there's no football being played, there's an awful lot of things going on, as you well know.
That's for sure. And so we wanted to talk about today a couple of different things. Talk a little bit about spring grades as we're going to get close to National and Blesto's meetings, which is usually around Memorial Day weekend. Like Neil said, there's a ton of different scouting changes that we wanted to kind of get into as well. And then an article that came out yesterday in regards to Leonard Fournette, the junior running back from LSU, getting two different policies that add up to about $10 million in insurance premiums there. And wanted to get in a little, about that as well. So three different aspects we want to kind of talk about today in the half an hour show we have here called Inside the Football Business. And we just wanted to dive in it too in regards to spring grades. Spring grades are something that obviously everybody's looking to get their hands on. Blesso and National are two scouting services that the NFL team subscribe to, and that obviously agents, trainers, financial advisors, anybody inside the football business are, want to get their hands on there to kind of see where those senior guys, kind of lay. Now, is it an exact science? No. If you look at last year, the number two pick overall, Carson Wentz, he had a priority free agent grade going into the season. But usually, those regards to grades, that's how kind of guys go from, the different all-star games to, the combine. And as Neil does a great job at Inside the League in regards to tracking junior days, and that's where the grade process starts there in regards to the junior evaluation there. And correct me if I'm wrong, Neil, but I think all those junior days are done, correct?
As far as I know, they are. I think everyone wants to have that pretty much done by around draft time. I know there are sometimes a couple that are immediately following the draft, but I think at this point they are, because so many teams, they want to have that out of the way so they can kind of make their changes in their scouting departments and what have you. And I think schools are acknowledged that. So yeah, I believe they're all done. Don't quote me on that. I'd be very surprised if there's still anything going on.
Gotcha. In regards to, obviously Blesso and National are longtime organizations, and National is the scouting service that runs the NFL Combine there down in Indianapolis. Your years of kind of tracking, the draft and being involved with, your business there with, dealing with agents and different things like that. How hard is it to get, get your hands on Blesso and National?
Interesting question. When ITL first started in 2002, I of Blesto it was what I call the deluxe copy. It had cell phone numbers for players. It had social security numbers for players. It had extensive family backgrounds and all those kinds of things for players. I mean, it was really incredibly sensitive information that was included. And it was, at this time I was very kind of new at this, not many friends in the business, not a lot of relationships, and it still kind of came across my desk. It was very common to find. And I think every agent who had any connections or half knew what was going on could get hold of it, and it really wasn't a big obstacle. However, as we've moved forward, they've done a lot of things to kind of encode digital, security measures into them. Not everyone has access to it. It's not widely handed out. The disk isn't as it used to be. Only certain people have access to it. I think when Jeff Foster came in at National around 2009, 2010 maybe, one of his mandates that was given to him was hey, you got to clean this up. We can't have this proprietary information out there everywhere. I know that NFL Draft Scout was sued, oh, 3 or 4 years ago because they put out some of National's proprietary information, and that became a rather public, rather interesting battle that was fought in the courts, and eventually that was resolved. I'm not sure exactly how, but you certainly don't see just kind of random stories out there anymore, or at least not nearly as common, about, hey, the spring grade just came out and this guy's rated number one, or this guy's not rated very highly or whatever. And you used to see that all the time. Sometimes you do now. I think it's done under the aegis of National itself, releasing the numbers that they want to certain writers or what have you. So it's changed a lot. And as a result, I think the process of recruiting and evaluation has changed for agents because you just don't have that access that you used to have. Now, that's kind of a market we've tried to fill in a legal way. We tried to provide confirmed information for parents of players because we strongly believe that's the way to go about doing this. Obviously, it's the most honest way, I think. And so we do that, and you know, we're calling numbers all the time and verifying and making sure and sorting through lists and trying to figure out who the players that we think are going to be the best prospects for next year. But as far as one place where you can just find it kind of on the black market, so to speak, not nearly as easy as it used to be. Now, with all that said, there are also questions about the real reliability and the accuracy of a report that comes out in May before football even starts in August and September. Every year there are players that are rated incredibly highly by Blesto and National that wind up going undrafted or drafted late or not performing up to expectations or a number of other things. With that said, I think about two-thirds, maybe a little bit more than that, of NFL teams subscribe to either National or Blesto just to kind of give them a head start on the process so they're not having to sift through literally almost 1,000 schools that play football in America. So they're definitely popular and they're definitely useful and respected, but you have to take it all with a grain of salt. And they're certainly a lot harder to find now for agents and contract advisors than they were in the early 2000s.
Yeah, for sure. And that, you know, you brought up a great point in regards to CBS Sportsline, had gotten, called or, gotten sued. And I actually had gotten a call from National's attorney, in regards to when they were dealing with those cases. I think they were calling anybody that, had interest in the NFL, had dealings regards to all-star games, et cetera. That was back when I was involved with the Texas First of the Nation game there. But what I do know is that, hey, a lot of the bigger agencies, that represent scouts, represent GMs, they always seem to have, the edge. And they always seem to have the edge because they have National and Bledsoe, in their kind of back mm-hmm. pocket and be able to kind of sort out there. Is that, hey, it is what it is. That's the world we live in regards to, America being a capitalist society and regards to, hey, you try to take every advantage of you can. Is it legal? No, it's proprietary information about National and Bledsoe,
right.
But the big firms get it. So the small firms are always trying to get their hands on that to try to compete. And so, I understand where, those are guys are trying to, put a kibosh on it, but when the big firms are still going to, get it, the small firms and the trainers and financial advisors also have to try to get, their hands on it as well. And we've talked mm-hmm. about the NFLPA in regards to trying to regulate, runners and trying to regulate runners out of this, the business in regards to agent stuff. And I really thought a good, different thing that kind of came up here yesterday in the news, and that was Leonard Fournette, the junior running back from LSU, and getting two disability policies and also, a disability policy and then also a loss of value policy there. Totaling up to $10 million in coverage. This is something we're seeing more and more of. It was a great article there by CBS Sports in regards to the different people in there. Basically what they had mentioned that, hey, each $1 million in insurance policy was about $8,000 in premium, being that, so this was $10 million, this was about an 80 $80,000 premium cost to Fournette. Now, there are abilities for the schools to help with that. There is a loophole in the NCAA. There also is the ability for the player to get a loan based on future earnings in regards to be able to pay for this, different things like that. But it's become a bigger and bigger thing. Now, we've only seen two guys in regards to getting paid from the loss of value policy, that one being the Oregon cornerback 2 years ago that went in the seventh round by the Cleveland Browns last year, who had a first-round type grade and blew his knee out. And then he was going to be able to put up $3 million. We saw a little bit of that in regards to Miles Jack at UCLA, because he dropped out of the first round. He's going to be a guy who's probably going to be able to collect on a loss of value claim, as well as there was some talk, and I don't remember how it all played out in regards to Jalen Smith. I think he went too high before the loss of value policy was going to kick in if he dropped even farther than when the Dallas Cowboys had picked him there in the second round. So, you know, is this something that you think, you know, there that we'll see more and more of, and is it something that should be allowed, or, you know, where's your stance on this, you know, insurance policies, the loss of value policies in regards to where it should be here in college football, Neil?
Well, the difficulty with these policies is that I think a lot of people, especially now in the age of, or the rising age of analytics and thinking that all things are completely objective and completely can be analyzed in a certain way and there are certain predictors of success and what have you, I'm not really on the analytics train yet. And I say that because the NFL draft is still such a subjective process, and the draft and the evaluation, it's really so hard to put a finger on how and why players get drafted. And there's a lot of emotion involved, and there are a lot of different factors that are really kind of hard to measure. So with all that said, I don't know exactly how you do these things. I mean, going back to our earlier discussion of Nashville and Blesto, I remember early in the days of ITL, when I would see these reports, I remember 1 year Eli Manning was the second-rated quarterback in by Blesto going into the year, okay? I remember 1 year there was a linebacker out of Syracuse who was the number one-rated player on Blesto's board. He went undrafted. If you would have gone off of Blesto on his policy, then he could have gotten, I guess he could have made lots of money, but was it because Blesto has very young scouts who are doing this early vetting and this early evaluation? I mean, we could spend a half hour just on Blesto and Nashville and how they do things. But, I mean, what you need to know is that these are mostly young scouts doing the initial vetting and initial evaluation. They don't have the experience level, for the most part, that everyone else does. So let's say they put a high grade on a player. It wasn't warranted. Now they got a premium. How many insurance companies are going to want to do, you know, pay out a premium on a player that really wasn't that good in the first place? I don't, you know, I mean, if you read my blog, one of the themes over the last couple of weeks is there are really no rules to this draft thing. I mean, everyone says, well, it's all based on height and speed and height, weight, and speed, and that's true. And a lot of them, well, it's based on production. Well, that's a very subjective measure. Well, it's got a lot to do with where they play. That's true as well. It's got a lot to do with how much success the team had. That's true as well. But how much? It's really hard to quantify. And with all that said, for all those reasons, I think it's hard to write these policies. This article kind of has a different tone from the one that I have seen in the business over the last few years. It seems like it's you're finding it harder to find companies that will write these policies. Now, I was approached about a month ago by a company who's looking to get into it. So maybe I'm misreading the business. Maybe this is more accurate, or maybe more and more companies are out there doing this. I just think it's so difficult to figure out exactly really where a player ranks, you know, about this time of year when you'd be writing as possible and be charging someone for a premium versus where they're going to be this time in a year. So I don't know. I mean, it's really – I will say this, Justin. If I was in this business, I would be very reluctant to write such a policy because it is just so hard to measure and hard to read, and there's so many different variables and factors that are involved that I think it's a tricky, somewhat risky investment. It also goes back to, as you mentioned earlier, the premiums on these are substantial. You're looking at $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, I think, for Fournette. It was well into six figures. And that's not the kind of thing that most families can pay for. Now, obviously, the school covers that, and then the way it works is after they're drafted, then the player has to reimburse. But that's still, you know, especially if, what if the kid winds up as an undrafted free agent and he had this policy, and for whatever reason, the insurance company eludes the payment. Now he's on the hook for a substantial premium that he thought was going to be easy to pay, and now isn't so easy to pay. And these insurance companies, as you know, Justin, can be very elusive, and they can wiggle off the hook pretty. I mean, that's kind of what they do. I'm not trying to act negatively towards insurance companies, but it is a business, and it is capitalism, as you mentioned earlier. So it's a really, really complicated topic, and I think there are a lot of people who are quoted in the story who kind of dismiss it and say, why are people even doing these policies? I kind of agree, and there aren't that many people really that are even would they make sense for, but the ones that they do, it's just really hard to tell exactly where a player is going to be drafted. And Leonard Fournette is a substantial player, and we know he'll go high next year. I think everyone agrees that this is his last year of college football. But where that is exactly is hard to measure and could mean millions of dollars. We saw that with Laramie Tunsil this year. So it's a difficult, very complicated topic, and one that is fraught with difficulties and a lot of different factors. And so I think, obviously, any player that does such a thing needs to be careful and really, really weigh all the factors and get as much counsel as possible before they make a mistake that could cost them a lot of money and their family a lot of money.
Yeah, and, you know, and two things, I think you brought up some, you know, good points there. One, it's going to be how can they, you know, how are they going to be able to get payment from the insurance company? Obviously, the insurance company is going to bet against them, not the insurance company not having to pay out this this policy deal, accepting, you know, the premiums there. And the gentleman who did Leonard Fournette and who's done a number of other ones is Ronnie Caymore out of Caymore Sports Risk Management. And the article says he's a leader in the industry and had done in the last 3 years. Claims to have about 25 first round picks into this insurance policy theirs. They're only going to be able to pay out this premium, the insurance companies, if something happens, if they, you know, have an injury or has, you know, there. But, you know, like Jameis Winston, he had $6 million worth of insurance premiums. Obviously, the insurance company didn't have to pay anything out to him because he wasn't injured, was the number one overall pick, and different things like that. And I think that's what you're seeing is more of these guys than who, hey, is the insurance even worth it? Is that $80,000 okay that Fournette's going to, let's say, hey, he doesn't get hurt, he gets drafted where he's supposed to get drafted and stuff like that. Now, hey, is that $80,000 worth, hey, the peace of mind, you know, and as the article had brought out, a lot of these players want it for the swagger, you know, the and the cachet of, yeah, and of having, you know, the insurance policy there. And again, are these insurance providers going to then prey upon these athletes saying, hey, you should get one, you know? And as the article had brought out that the University of Oregon got an unsolicited, you know, quote for every one of their players, you know, so we talk about the, you know, the NFLPA in regards to the regulating of, you know, the agents. Well, this is, I think this could potentially be an issue that, you know, hey, how are you going to be able to kind of regulate these there? And same thing with the trainers and financial advisors, that there's no regulation, you know, of that. In regards to, hey, when you're trying to talk to players, I mean, everybody says, oh, don't talk to an agent, you could lose whatever. But, hey, there's insurance guys out there, there's trainers out there, there's financial advisors out there. So I think it's a slippery slope and something that I think, you know, hey, is it going to be more prevalent? I think we're going to see more of this before it kind of, you know, before we ever see less of, you know, these people trying to get involved with these players' lives and giving them a policy maybe that's not even worth anything, but that insurance agent's going to make some good dollars and good commission off of that player, you know, without ever even, you know, really helping the athlete out there. So definitely it's an interesting, you know, scenario, an interesting thing that's come out there. And obviously now that we're going to start, you know, training, you know, camp here in a couple of months for not only the NFL, but college football, it's going to be something we're going to see more and more of. But hey, you know, like you had said in regards to the scouts, that is something that we are seeing, you know, a lot of changeovers here, there, and it's something that nobody else does, the work that you guys do there at Inside the League in regards to tracking that. And hey, if you're in the industry, if you are an agent, you're listening to this, this is something that why you want to become a member of ITL, it's because of the scouts. And that is the lifeblood of information for you as an agent to go try to have a relationship with these scouts that are going to help you not only get your play, get a better client and under the radar client, but also help your client get into a training camp, get signed as an undrafted rookie free agent. So that is a lifeblood of, you know, of an agent there. So what have we seen, you know, kind of this off season, now that the draft is done, and this is kind of when the scouts kind of move from team to team. What have we seen there, Neil, and what do we see, you know, kind of see in the future here this year?
Well, right now, there are a few hot spots. I think we saw the Chargers that obviously have struggled a little bit. They have kind of reset their house. They've made some changes. Didn't bring a lot of people in. They let some people go, but then they elevated from within to kind of fill those spots. The Falcons are doing the same. They've made a lot of changes in the last 4 months, bringing in a few more seasoned scouts into key positions. They're beefing up their pro program, their pro scouting department as well, doing some things there. Detroit, just this morning I found out that they picked up Brendan Prophet, who was an area scout with the Saints, had been director of pro for the Jets 2 years ago. It's going to be their new director of pro scouting. The Lions are still kind of getting their house in order. So those are kind of, especially Atlanta and Detroit right now, are two of the hotter places and teams that are really trying to kind of retool and rewire their scouting departments and try to make some changes there. One place that I think everyone expected there to be a lot of changes but hasn't really materialized is Tennessee, where, you know, John Robinson is in as the new general manager, but they've got a number of scouts there who still have a year left on their deals, and the Titans ownership is reluctant to pay them off. They want to get their money's worth out of the scouts. So that means that if there are major changes in Tennessee next year, or there will not be this year, what I'm being told. What I'm hearing is to expect a lot of changes next year, especially if they struggle this year and have a little bit, can't really, you know, kind of get the engine started as far as really having success in the field. So that's kind of where things are moving. As far as trends, I think what we're seeing a lot of is teams that are just looking to move up from within. I talk to veteran scouts every day, and they're having harder and harder times getting back in the business. And I think that's been true for really the past 5 or 6 years. And it's become a situation where it's almost as if the more experience you have in scouting, the harder it is for you to find a job. Now, I guess that's kind of true across the board in the business climate in America right now. It's harder to employ someone who's going to require a little bit more money, and you've got to pay an experience level. So that's part of it. But also, I think teams want to kind of raise their own kids, so to speak, and they want to teach them in their own ways, and they've got more sway over scouts when they do that. And also, as we've seen the proliferation of the Patriots model, which is taking place across the NFL, most teams don't want young scouts because they'll go out and they'll gather facts, They'll do a lot of things, you know, just to gather information, but they're not necessarily looked upon as someone that needs to come back with an opinion and who's going to really get up on the table and fight for a player in the later rounds or in undrafted free agency. They're going to be more willing to concede all that to the top of the power structure and allow, you know, the director level scouts to make those decisions. And I think more and more teams are starting to look for that. And as that happens, it's getting harder for seasoned scouts to get back into the game. Now, also, I think one thing we're seeing is, and this has also been true for a while, the bean counters with the teams are always looking for ways to save money. Say, hey, why are we paying these guys to go and watch football and watch games and those kinds of things? I think that scouts, I mean, I think, Justin, like you, I have tremendous respect for what these people do and for their skill set. And I think that they're far more than just some guy who's going out to watch a football game. But that's not the way a lot of people who, especially that are kind of newer to the business, and in the last 20 years, the NFL's looked at far more as a business rather than maybe more of a science than an art, especially when it comes to budgetary measures and things of that nature. And so that level of expertise and the know-how that comes with being a scout isn't as valued as it once was. And so, you know, again, it's one more consideration for why it's so much harder for veteran scouts to stay in the game or get back in the game if they're let go. And so what it winds up is a lot of people being dumped on the market that have serious resumes but still can't get back in. And unfortunately for them, a rather narrow field of experience. There's not a lot of places you can go where really knowing about, you know, hip level and ability to move your feet and all those kind of, you know, flexibility and that kind of thing are valued. There's just not many places unless you can land something with the NFL Network or somewhere along those lines. So it's hard and it's tough. And I guess for all those folks out there that would love to be a scout and that are kind of hoping that is their career path, just remember that there's another side to that. And it's not always as rosy as it looks. And it's hard to get in and sometimes even harder to get back in.
Yeah, for sure. You were saying all those the hips and the flexibility is the only thing I was thinking of. Maybe they could go scout Dancing with the Stars. Maybe.
Well, you know, there are a lot of NFL players that are going to Dancing with the Stars now. So maybe there's some kind of synergy that they can develop. I never thought about that. But, yeah, that's a possibility. They could scout actors and actresses and try to find the next Dancing with the Stars lineups.
That's where I was there.
I don't know what that pays, but maybe it's worth a shot anyway.
Hey, you know, it's a resume builder.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. I mean, whatever it takes, right?
That's for sure. That's for sure. So, no, I think, you know, like you had said, I mean, the scouting, you know, circle is hard to break into, and it's harder to kind of get back into there. So, you know, we'll see. And that's why you've got to be, you know, hopefully on a winning team. You know, if you're with the Patriots and different things like that in regards to, hey, if you're winning, you know, on a winning team, you're going to be more secure in your job and be able to kind of have more opportunities. If your team doesn't win, doesn't perform on the field, there's you know, less opportunities for you to kind of get back in there. So it's definitely interesting. And, you know, another half an hour is you know, passed us by, Neil, and he had some great topics in regards to spring grades and, you know, as far as Leonard Fournette and the scouts, and it's kind of all kind of wraps in there and kind of, you know, a nice bow and say, hey, you know, we're kind of going through the summer and these are the kind of, you know, things that will pop up and we'll be able to discuss, you know, kind of, you know, more in depth. And so if we got 30 seconds here, Neil, anything people on that should check out ITL, anything that coming up here in the next couple of days?
Well, we're moving through the seas in our profile reports, and I think Colorado, we're a little behind schedule. We've got Colorado and Colorado State coming up next. We've got, obviously, there's still scouting changes that are taking place, still a few things that will shake loose. We're at about 60 moves right now in the scouting community. There'll be about 100 before things slow down next weekend. And we're kind of, other than that, kind of looking at the agency changes. There are also changes in the agency lineup, so still a lot going on, and still an exciting time, even though the draft is over.
Cool. Well, you have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon, Neil.
Sounds great, Justin. Thanks again.